You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. There comes a moment in every superhero movie where you're not quite sure if the hero will be able to save the day. Everything that could possibly go wrong has gone wrong. Everything's on fire, they're hanging off a building, and the bad guy's closing in with a literal army. It's chaos. But then they take a deep breath and time slows down. They figure out what they need to do, put out the fire, pile drive the bad guy, etc., and they do it. It's this moment of calm and precision in the centre of utter chaos. And I love it! Very few things bring me as much joy as watching a superhero fly kick four bad guys in a row in slow motion. This week, we're taking things that seem chaotic and finding the order and calm within them. After spending most of her 20s in Tasmania, Mel is moving to the mainland. In our first story, she shares the things she's loved most about her 8 years in Hobart.
At the end of this year, I'll be moving to Melbourne. I'm leaving Tasmania, my home for the past 8 years, and exploring new horizons. I'm excited to move, but I'm sad to go as well. This is where I've spent most of my 20s, a place that I've done a lot of messing around and a lot of growing up. It's a formidable, beautiful, lonely place with frozen mountains, uncharted wilderness, and long, dark, cold winters. It's also where I discovered a new sound, one that will forever be wrapped up with my memories of this place. Death metal. Early on in my Hobart days, I was living in my car, I worked at the local co-op, and most of my friends were punks. I never really let on, but I didn't like punk music. I was even in a punk band for a while, so I managed to keep up the act. I mean, I appreciate the sentiment. Anyone can play an instrument and everything is valid. Do whatever you want with that guitar. I just don't necessarily want to hear it. Anyway, winter crept in and my car was getting cold. A friend suggested that I move in with two of her friends. I went to meet them and sat in the lounge room with a handful of long-haired, good-natured boys, laughing and playing around on a guitar. It turned out they were all in a death metal band. As I was leaving, I said, "So, can I move in here?" "Oh, yeah," said the singer. "Well, it was either you or a drug dealer, so I reckon you're in." Soon I was introduced to the other members of the band, and all of their metal-loving friends. I fell in with a group of guys who, despite their black clothes, dark eye makeup and aloof demeanours, were all incredibly sensitive, caring and truly genuine people. The singer was a curly-haired angel of chaos, spiritual, gregarious and optimistic. He was my polar opposite, and I liked him especially. We became best friends and then after a year we started dating. We've been together for 4.5 years now. But this isn't a love story about humans. This is a love story about death metal. If you know nothing about death metal, if you think metal is angry music and why would anyone listen to that, I want to take you by the hand and walk you through the dense forest, up the freezing snow caps and down into the Antarctic currents of this beautiful, misunderstood musical landscape. To do this, I've enlisted the help of a metal scholar. Ben Hillier wrote his honours thesis about metal, and he's in the final throes of a PhD about metal as we speak.
I agree with you. I don't tend to see metal as angry. I don't think anger is very often expressed in metal. Certainly it's there, but I don't tend to associate metal with anger very much.
No.
And if you're just taking the surface, you're missing so much more. There's so much more depth.
So first, for clarity, under the broad umbrella of metal, you have heavy metal and extreme metal. A lot of the classic bands you're thinking of, like Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, they fall under heavy metal. Under extreme metal, you could classify Metallica and Slayer, say, but there are a lot more variations.
Thrash, black death, doom, grind. They're the five classic extreme metal subgenres, and then they all split down into a bunch.
That was really quick. You just listed those.
I've probably got the sense from you know, the five main subgenres of extreme metal are thrash metal, black metal, death metal, doom metal, and grindcore. Karn Harris, 2007, Filipov, 2012. I've written that sentence in papers so many times.
Extreme metal emerged in the UK and the US, but it became massively influential in Northern Europe, and this is where a lot of the subgenres were refined. The Scandinavian influence brought more melody and emotional nuance to metal, I think. Maybe it's the long winters, but there's a certain existential angst and a capital R romanticism about the Northern European metal that really speaks to Tasmania as well, I think. But Ben says there's something else about this place that makes Tasmanians drawn to metal. Something I hadn't really considered before. Death metal was very big in Stockholm, the capital of Sweden, but then in the early 90s, melodic death metal sprung up from a little port town called Gothenburg.
And a lot of the musicians would say that this place, Gothenburg, was just empty. There was nothing there. There was nothing for them. They had nothing to do but sit around and play their instruments. And that connects in my head to the way I hear people talk about places like Hobart, and particularly people that have grown up here. They often say they just needed to get out of here because there was nothing in Hobart. So you had a lot of these people starting bands and writing this as you say, bleak, melancholy music. I'm very interested in this like thread of melancholy that weaves through a lot of the way metal is put together. There was this very pervasive idea in 90s literature on metal that it was for young white men with no future.
Okay.
It was the music of teenage burnouts, basically.
No.
Which, you know,
so sad.
Might have a little bit of classism in it. And I think it was more about that demographic trying to protest their lack of power, looking at their future and seeing that future and going, we don't want that.
In an emotionally restrained society, screaming is something we're only allowed to do when we're giving birth or grieving, if even then. Metal is empowering because it allows us to be as expressive as we need to be. And Tasmania isn't alone in taking up this mantle. Take the Taiwanese band Thonic, for example, who sing about persecution by the Chinese government. Or the Aboriginal band Dispossessed, who demand the destruction of colonial Australia. Or the incredible blues and black metal fusion in this song by Zealand Ardor. Whether it's political or personal or both, when I listen to metal, I scream vicariously. That honesty gives me power, and that power gives me hope. And this is the thing about metal. It can express darkness. It can be deeply painful, sorrowful, and despairing at times. But it can also be joyful, energizing, and exultant at others.
Dark Tranquility's Letha from the Gallery album is a great example of that. Like you hit the bridge. And Mikhail Stan is screaming with such emotion. You can hear his voice break. And it comes at the climax of the song, and that always gives me shivers because it is just this, like, not even frustration, but just such raw emotion.
One of the things I love about it is the sincerity it can express as well. In a post-ironic world, it's just nice to still believe that bands can say the kinds of things that Dark Tranquility can say in all seriousness. I really need that in my life. I think the world needs more of that. Sincere, unflinching expressions of grieving and death and terror and the wonder and madness of life. Insincerity and pretense can be dangerous things, both mentally and socially. And I find myself increasingly drawn towards people who resist those things. A couple of years ago, I started working at this trendy coffee shop. My colleagues were the usual suspects, tattooed, well-groomed, superficially charming, and a little self-obsessed. But then there was John. He had long hair and dark eyes. He wore Nintendo shirts and built his own computers. He was the odd one out, and everyone made sure he knew it. I was working with him on the coffee machine one day, steaming milk as he pulled the shots, when he asked, "So what kind of music do you listen to?" I've been listening to a lot of metal lately. "Oh yeah, like Metallica and stuff?" "No, I don't really like Metallica. I'm more into Northern European melodic death metal. Suddenly his eyes lit up with delight. After a year of working with Fat Freddy's Drop or whatever it is cafes play, John at last had an ally in his love of melodic death metal, and I in mine. We became great friends. The cool baristas would go out all night, taking pingers and dancing to techno. John and I would be warming up the coffee machine at 5 in the morning, absolutely blasting Dark Tranquillity and feeling on top of the world.
The breadth of expression you can have that still constitutes acceptable within metal is, I think, broader than it is in other genres of popular music. Like, I find it difficult to imagine, like, a Taylor Swift song, for example, not to dig at Taylor Swift or anything, but that delves into melancholy in the same way that Dark Tranquillity does.
No, totally.
One of the only exceptions that I'd say is I don't think metal does positive emotions quite as well. I've seen it do like happy and party music, but I can't think of many good metal love songs. I think there's some good power ballads and stuff like that.
Yeah. But that's just not, and I mean, it's different for everyone, and maybe you have some insight on this, but that's not the role it plays, certainly not in my life, you know. I think metal music makes me happy, but it's because it allows me to explore and express darkness, which everyone needs to do. I'm thinking about, you know, like the role that metal has in my life. And for me, it's, you know, like I'll go to a gig and headbang and stuff. I love that stuff. But I think if I'm listening to it at home, it's like something that I'll listen to in the morning when I'm doing yoga. It's something that I'll listen to relax.
Yeah.
And how I feel about it is that it, like, for someone that's like a little bit kind of anxious and hyperactive and has a lot of things going on in their head, it like fills all the spaces in my brain and it feels like it's just complete enough and complex enough and loud enough and intense enough to slow everything else down.
Yeah. I think the first thing I'll say is that description you gave is excellent. That puts into words something I found hard to express for a long time because I'm the same. I'm quite an anxious person. And I actually find metal is very helpful for breaking through that. And you're right, it fills up the extra space in your brain and there's nothing but music.
Yeah.
And that's helpful. I find different genres suit different emotions more. There's some music that I will only listen to at repose, for want of a better word, like when I'm not moving. Mm-hmm. And I find like atmospheric black metal, anything that's kind of very washy and kind of has that fuzzy texture to it. It's not necessarily a driving beat. It's just kind of there. It absorbs you.
Yeah,
but I find if I'm moving, I need something that drives a bit more, that has that push. And that for me is quite energizing and motivating. And I do find for me, a lot of the time I find it inspirational. I find I can't go more than one or two days without listening to some kind of metal. Otherwise, I just feel weird.
I think that really speaks to the complexity of metal as well. Mm. What we were saying before, in that it's like emotionally complex, is that it can fill all these different roles in your life. Like you say, definitely. Like sometimes you listen to it to sit still, sometimes you listen to it for motivation. And that's the beauty of the genre, I suppose, right, is that it is so diverse in what it can give you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Metal lives in extremities. Northern extremities, southern extremities, and emotional extremities. Metal invites you to be as expressive as you need to be, without irony or reservation. I've tried on many hats in my life. I was raised a Christian, and then left home to go travelling and became a hippie. I found punk and became a bit of a cynic and a nihilist. Of all those things, though, death metal has been the most life-affirming and the most emotionally healthy. There's something radically hopeful about standing up, facing the storm, and screaming at the top of your lungs.
Sun,
Captain's Chair.
That story was produced by Mel Chun. Ryan Pemberton was the supervising producer. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. Jackson grew up in Darwin, where the weather could be pretty unpredictable. As it turns out, life can be unpredictable too. A content warning, this story contains strong language and mentions of suicide. If you're in need of support, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or the Suicide Callback Service on 1300 659 467.
I've always had a very detailed interest in what makes things work and why things are the way they are. So, you know, as a six-year-old, I was thinking about what's it like to be sucked into a black hole? or where does life come from? Where does it originate from? But, you know, on a more local front, I grew up here in the build-up, in the storms, and, you know, it's pretty horrible time. You're always anticipating that storm rolling in. And I wanted to know what made those things work, and also why the schools shut in the wet season for some reason. They're just bigger storms. But this story is a wild one too, because my life has been a bit like a weather chart, full of highs and lows. So essentially, home life was fucked. It was really, really bad. It wasn't a nice place to grow up. I didn't enjoy it. But, you know, I found myself kicking around on the streets and running into trouble, breaking the law, you know, breaking into cars, breaking into houses, assaulting people, just being a general fuck-up. And that all caught up with me, and I was given a juvenile diversion program. So for those that don't know what it is, it's essentially you'll complete the diversion program or you'll go to jail. So I decided to complete the diversion program and I went off to boarding school in Queensland. And, you know, it was good. It meant I stopped taking away from the community and then I was starting to invest in myself so that one day I could, you know, start to contribute back toward the community. And I turned all my C's and D's and E's into A's and B's. And I missed 2 days of school in 2 years. It was good. I'd put my dreams behind me. I didn't really think that becoming a meteorologist was possible. So I focused on something a bit more realistic and I joined the military. Straight out of high school, I went to ADFRA in Canberra. It's a military university. And things were looking up, you know. I had a stable home. I had a good education, and at the end of my first year there, I get a phone call from Mum, and she told me that my sister Carmel had committed suicide. All that bullshit that I'd left behind in Darwin had caught up with her, and that was heartbreaking. You know, I had to give up my dream of becoming an Air Force officer to go look after my three remaining siblings, as well as my single mum who wasn't coping. So, yeah, I found myself back in Darwin, 19 years old, and whippersnippering the arterial roads of Darwin. And it was a stark contrast to you know, having this sense of, you know, pride instilled in you by the Defence Force, and I'm cutting grass at the side of the road. And yeah, it was a thoroughly depressing time. I abused alcohol and just fell into a rut. But the ultimate thing was I was putting money on the table and I was helping my mum when in her time of need. And after a year, I saw that, you know, things really improved. And I went and followed my friend to university in Brisbane. And I met my lovely wife down there in the first week. And, things started to look up again. Went back to the civilian world. Had a bit of a silver lining. I wasn't railroaded on a military career anymore. Had all these possibilities that were extended to me, and it went well. We travelled around Australia, and as a birthday present, Esther had organised a surprise tour of the Sydney Regional Forecasting Centre. I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. The supervising meteorologist thought it was the strangest request he'd ever had in 35 years of his service. That kind of spurred me on. It got the hunger in my belly again, and I cold called the bureau and I asked for work experience if I had any openings, and they sadly didn't. So that was a little bit disappointing. We continued our trip around Australia, and we found ourselves in Melbourne. This was right after the bushfires of 2009, where they had a number of people, pass away in the foothills around. And I get another call from my mum, and it's wet season in Darwin, and my little brother he drowned in Rapid Creek. He got his leg snagged in a rope. And I really wanted to do what I did just before, just quit. But at the behest of my lovely wife, she asked me to stay on the track. So, here we were in Melbourne, fiery red skies. The city was just filled with sadness. I was 3,000 k's away from my family and I was unable to do anything. It was just a sense of helplessness. And we continued on. I rang the bureau again once we had got back into the academic semester, and I was offered a cadetship, an Indigenous cadetship. So 2 months later, I found myself in the forecasting centre in Brisbane. And I'll tell you what, for those of you that don't know what goes into meteorology, it is immense. There is so much information that comes in from satellites, from automatic weather stations, from ships, from observers, from space-based observations. All of that gets fed into computer models and it churns out a forecast, which then the meteorologists look at and try to sort the crap from the good. It was absolutely mind-blowing going in there and just realising, the volume of work that was involved. And I turned to my wife and I was like, I don't know if this is for me. But, we stayed on that. And it turns out it was a very good time to be a cadet in Queensland. It was La Nina year in 2010, the two biggest La Nina years on record in Australia. And we had every river system in Queensland go major in terms of flood level. Both sides of the divide, the Murray-Darling system, as well as all the coastal rivers. We had the Toowoomba flash flood event, where they got 300 mils of rainfall in an hour. And Toowoomba's on top of the Great Dividing Range. You wouldn't expect there to be a flood. But nevertheless, there were cars floating down the east street of Toowoomba. We had the Brisbane Riverine flooding. And I guess the ultimate thing that really spurred me on was Cyclone Yasi. Cyclone Yasi was a Category 5 system that barreled in and was predicted to cross the coast, according to the guidance, anywhere between Cairns and Townsville. Category 5 systems are pretty serious. They're very life-threatening. Very few structures will withstand that sort of wind stress, let alone the storm surge. And in terms of threat to northern Australia, there's 350,000 people in that stretch of northern Australia. It's probably the most populated part of northern Australia. And it was really humbling to see the mechanisms at work kick into action. So all the severe weather meteorologists, the directors, were talking to state premiers, we're talking to the state emergency service, we're talking to the police, and getting people in the know, getting people evacuated, getting people prepared. And this system did cross, and it crossed as predicted, you know, forecast to be just as strong. There was no direct deaths associated with it. And that was really, really good. Like, you know, in Queensland's time of need, my organisation came and assisted them, and it was really humbling. And it was something that further spurned me on, so I continued my my path in the Bureau, and am now a meteorologist up here, and I hopefully can afford you guys the same opportunity if the situation arises. Thank you.
That story was told by Jackson Brown. It was produced by Johanna Bell. Jackson told this story at Spun, a live storytelling night presented by Story Projects in the Northern Territory. You can subscribe to the Spun Stories podcast and find out more about the Spun Storytelling Project by visiting spunstories.net. You can also look for Spun Stories on Facebook and Twitter. If you need support after listening to this story, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or the Suicide Callback Service on 1300 659 467. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Josh McCoy. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Mel Chun is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best community coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN community coordinator is Lee Robinson. Matilda Fay and Angela Moran are our social media producers. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and were made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find more episodes by searching for All the Best wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Maddie McQueen. Thanks for listening.